pain. It's like my dreams out of reach. This pain and all this grief. If you see God and you have to speak, tell him it's crazy in these streets. Feel my pain and you're so deep.
Yo, I'm Pastor Phil. Welcome to Church on the Block, real talk about hip-hop, the church, and the streets with my great co-host, Pastor Jay and Ruck Boy on Holy Culture Radio, Sirius XM.
Good morning, what's up, y'all? It's your boy, Pastor Jay. We are here, you are in the right place at the right time. You know what it is, Church on the Block, real talk about hip-hop, the church, and the streets right here on Holy Culture Radio, Sirius XM Channel 140. We are so glad that y'all are back with us every Sunday morning for an opportunity just to engage and to talk about what's going on the streets, in the church, and with hip-hop. Now, you know I'm not by myself. When y'all hear my voice, that means that Pastor Phil ain't on yet. But you know my boy is with me. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell them who you are.
Yo, what's good, people? It is a beautiful Sunday morning. So blessed to be here with you all. Ready to get these conversations cracking today and, man, talk to our special guest today.
Yeah, special guest. And I'm super excited. I got to introduce y'all to our guest today. Good guy I just got to know really well. And now we're building. I think we get into some good trouble, as Congressman John Lewis would say. Dr. Damon Glenn, who is pastor of the Cultural Soul Project, but also an intelligent scholar in his own right, you know what I mean, as well as just somebody that you need to know. We're going to talk a little bit about hip-hop today, but first, let this man introduce himself however he desires so y'all can get to know who we know. Go ahead, Doc, introduce yourself.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, first of all, DJ Ruckus and Pastor Jay, thanks for having me on, man. You guys are some strong brothers doing some great things, man. It's just a blessing and a pleasure to be with y'all today, first and foremost. So my name is Dr. Damon Glenn. I'm the founder and senior pastor of the Cultural Soul Project. We're a new church in Portland, Oregon, and I like to affectionately tell people our ministry exists at the intersection of race, faith, hip-hop, and justice. And another tagline is, through the lens of the African-American experience, we are remixing the church to curate a beloved community for people who have been shaped by life on the margins. So it's a blessing to be here to talk hip-hop, to talk church. I'm always sneaking in blackness because that's where I'm centered at. And just ready to chop it up with y'all.
Good stuff, man. That's good stuff. We appreciate you, man. I think everybody who's been following our show and knows what we talk about will understand why we had to have Damon on here. Because, I mean, look, every day he talked about his church and his whole movement being about is what we talk about here on this show, right? And so what we want to do is have a real critical and, intelligent conversation about hip hop, about the church, about streets. But what we're going to do is we're going to start with this first section, and we're going to start with just some intellectual conversation about hip hop and its critical kind of usefulness in history and society today. As a pastor and as a theologian and as an academic, what do you think, Damon, is the place of hip hop in the academy, and how have you used it in your work, whether it was in the academy or in the church?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've done both. So before I came to ministry, full time, I was a college administrator and college professor, and actually created a course called Critical Hip Hop Studies. And I love the word critical. My doctoral dissertation used critical theory as a lens by which to look at the college experiences of Black male undergraduates at private, predominantly white colleges in the Pacific Northwest. I know that's a mouthful. We're not going to get into that. But critical was really, critical is really important because when I talk about critical, I talk about power dynamics. I talk about structures. I talk about identity. I talk about lived experience, lived realities, cultural sensibilities that people draw upon to make sense of the world. So when I created this course, everything I do is critical because it's always going to look at systems, structures, power, identity, et cetera. But for me, hip hop is this really profound thing that for me, it's about, we understand the cultural art form, right? So we understand the cultural art form. But when we go deeper underneath the cultural art form, it's really about how do we make sense of meaning, being, and purpose? How do we make sense of meaning, being, and purpose? And that connects a lot to the church. And when we talk more deeply about the church, I'm going to get into that. But how do we make sense of meaning, being, and purpose? But also, this is the key part, Pastor Jay and DJ Ruckus, is where I'm concerned about, how do we negotiate and formulate identity within various social, structural, and psychological forms of marginalization? And so for me, man, that's why I pick up this conversation about hip hop. It's the lived experience. It's the lived realities. How are people making sense of meaning, being, and purpose? How are marginalized folks making sense of meaning, being, and purpose within their location? How are we formulating and negotiating identity? But also, how are we just having some fun? How are we having some respite from some of the challenges that disproportionately affect people in inner city urban America and folks at large? But for me, hip hop is, how do we make sense of meaning, being, and purpose? How do we formulate and negotiate identity? But also, how does the art form provide valuable social commentary and social critique on a lot of the issues that are happening in our society? And if you look at hip hop from a historical standpoint, it's really easy to come at it from kind of those intellectual frameworks that are articulated. Because if you understand how hip hop was birthed, and you know, understand it was birthed out of struggle, it was birthed from the Bronx. It wasn't just birthed accidentally. There were policies and systems at play that disproportionately relegated certain people to the margins, right? And through those circumstances and through that reality and through those challenges, this art form emerged and birthed out of that, right? And so for me, I'll kind of slow it down and hear more from y'all, but for me, when I think about systems, structures, power, identity, meaning, being, and purpose, and all those things, man, that's where hip hop begins. And then the things around authenticity that connects with identity and all those kind of things, you know, that emerges. But when I think about hip hop, those are some of the things that I think I start talking about.
That's dope. That's dope. Listen, see, we told y'all we was about to have an intellectual conversation this morning. I hope y'all got your coffee. I hope you're sitting there with your thesaurus out and your dictionary ready to get it in with this brilliant Black man who was representing hip hop. Faith, race, culture, power dynamics, all the great things. Y'all, I'm done. I'm going to ask some pretty, what's the word I want to use? I'll say some agitating questions in a second, but I think they won't be agitating for you because they're what you think about all the time. But one of the things that you just talked about was this idea of hip hop being birthed out of the margins, and that there being all of these power dynamics and structural injustices at play, which birthed this culture that has grown to be the most prominent and impactful culture in the world today. Here's what I'd love for you to talk just a little bit about. So we know that it comes out of the Bronx, and we know that the Bronx at that time is overwhelmingly African-American. There are sprinkles of definitely, I don't want to throw our Latino and Latino brothers and sisters out of the way. They were definitely part. Yeah. What was happening during that time, but we know it's an overwhelmingly African-American culture, okay? And so here's the first little kind of, you know, ruffle here. One of my favorite books of hip-hop is Bakari Kitwana's book, Why White Kids Love Hip-Hop.
Yeah, yeah, okay? I have that book, yeah.
And I know you were very clear about saying that, like, this is also rooted in Blackness for you, all right? Yeah. I want you just to talk a little bit about why amplifying Blackness as a part of this narrative around power dynamics, marginalization, and hip hop is so important for you. I know it has to do with your own personal story and your personal location, but are there other reasons why you feel like Blackness needs to be amplified as you talk about marginalization and where hip hop came from?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So I think first things first, I was talking with somebody about this today. Specifically, when you're talking about, I would say Blackness as a whole, but let's just kind of talk about it within an urban, inner city urban context. I think when people talk about Blackness and the experiences of Black people, particularly in urban America, it's always through the lens of pathology or nihilism, right? It's always through the issues that Black folks have. And it's not even the conversation is disingenuous in the sense that you're not looking at the issues as a means by which to help folks address the challenges that they may be confronting. You are usually victim blaming and saying the reason why these folks have these issues is because of X, Y, and Z, or 1, 2, and 3. And I think for me, the reason why I like to talk about hip hop so much and center Blackness It's because Blackness is so complicated. It's so multi-contextual. It's so multifaceted. It's so beautiful. There's so much joy. There's so much imagination. There's so much possibility in it. But oftentimes when Blackness gets discussed, marketed, or talked about in the mainstream, it's very narrow. And it's usually through that lens, like I said, of pathology and unfortunately, dysfunction. And so for me, not only do I want to center Blackness, because I don't think Blackness is centered in most mainstream institutions or structures unless it's pathologized or imagined through kind of a particular racist lens. I like to center Blackness to talk about the beauty, the joy, and the possibilities of it. And I think when you look at hip hop at its best, right? Hip hop in its prophetic form, as I like to articulate, hip hop at its highest moment, in its most progressive form, man, there's so much ingenuity. There's so much Black beauty. There's so much Black imagination. There's so much Black possibility. There's so much in there. And that is the stuff. Oh, my goodness. That is the stuff that I draw upon in my ministry to help transform lives and put people in relationship with God so their souls can be, you know, transformed as well. So for me, man, hip hop, I got to center Blackness, because when I center Blackness, I'm centering myself. And as a person from the Pacific Northwest, Portland, Oregon, oftentimes, you know, sorry, but I'm just saying, as a Black person from Portland, Oregon, in the Pacific Northwest, and I would actually say, even though I would even look at it as a microcosm, you know, unfortunately, people want Blackness to be, society seduces you into, as Cornel West would say, being well adjusted to the status quo as opposed to maladjusted to the status quo. And unfortunately, Blackness can get lost and swept under the rug because people are trying to assimilate to some baseline that doesn't really reflect their lived experience and lived realities. And so for me, I want to let people know, when I tell people this all the time, when I was a vice president of a college, I used to tell people this, everybody, I'm not a vice president who is Black. I'm a Black vice president. Right. Let's keep it clear. I'm not a vice president who is Black. I am a Black vice president. And what I mean by that is my lived experience, my lived reality, and the cultural sensibilities that I draw upon that make sense of the world is through a Black cultural lens. And that is the lens by which I look at my vice presidentship. You know what I mean? That's the lens by which I do my work. And so hip hop helps me do that. And for me, the study of hip hop, the embracing of hip hop, me being, you know, part of hip hop, it helps me keep my Blackness centered.
That's good, bro. And, you know, we don't shy away on this show from, like, centering Blackness either. Like, when we had last year, we had a whole section on, like, can she preach? You know, can she pastor? Talking about women. And we didn't shy away that we were talking about Black women, right? Like, that's all we had on our show. But what we want to help people recognize here who may be listening to us, who come from a different cultural background, different race, or whatever the case may be, is that you can't talk about hip hop without talking about the Black experience. And that's what I love that you center. That's what you help people realize, because people want hip hop, but don't want the Black experience that comes with it. They don't want to talk about marginalization. They don't want to talk about reparations. They don't want to talk about, you know, all the things that come with that conversation. They just want to consume the culture. And so I appreciate you for the ways that you center the narrative of Blackness, as well as promote this idea of what it looks like to critically talk about hip hop. So we only got a few minutes left in this first section. Okay. I do want to say this. I want you thinking about this before we go into this next section. And I want everybody to know that Pastor Phil has joined us. Pastor Phil is with us.
Now. Pastor Phil, you're in the building.
See? Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah, thereby dropping bombs. He only here dropping intellectual bombs, Phil, as usual. But so that, like, I want you to think about this, man. You dropped a name there, you know, Cornel West. And I was on your website earlier, and I see you, like, posing with Cornel West and Tavis Smiley, and, like, you know, that's what's up. Yeah. But, yeah. Like, one of my favorite books is one they wrote together called The Rich and the Rest of Us.
Yeah, that's right.
Love that book.
Yeah.
And so I love for us to dialogue a little bit about the intersections of race and class, you know, talking about poverty a little bit and how that connects to hip hop when we come back. So if you could be thinking about that would be dope, because we're going to come in this next section and we're going to talk a little bit about not just hip hop, but we're going to talk about hip hop in the church. So we got to merge, you know, all you, I mean, but you already do that because you're talking about race, faith, hip hop, culture, right? Like you're talking about all this stuff. So let's figure out how we could do that. Mm-hmm. All right. Phil, we're glad you joined us, man.
You know, I've always been here just in the cut, in the, you know, on the wall, leaning against the wall, seeing what's going on.
Yeah. And your B-boy stance. I got you, man.
Right. I'm holding it down.
Well, y'all, hey, we're going to be right back. You do not want to miss this next part as we talk with Dr. Glenn continually. Now we're going to move into hip-hop and the church, and we also talk a little bit about intersections of not only race, but also, you know, class. So join us. Come going well. We'll be right back. So get that bacon before it burns and come on back and join us. We out. Church on the Block. See y'all in a few minutes.
Yo, we are back. I snuck in, family. What's going on, Church on the Block? Real talk about hip-hop, the church, and the streets. Channel 140, Sirius XM, Holy Culture Radio. I'm going to toss it back to Jay, man. We in a deep discussion with the doc, Dr. Glenn, yes. Dr. G. Dr. G in the building, man. Grateful for you to be with us, man. So
it's a blessing.
We conclude the first section with these questions about hip-hop and the church. We're going into this section with hip-hop and the church, issues of race and interplay with hip hop and all that. But man, what is your word on this movement? Been movement for a long time, but sometimes it ebbs and flows.
That's a good way of saying that it ebbs and flows.
Whether it's real hip hop,
he wouldn't use the word like Christian hip hop. He would be talking about faith in hip hop. So I think that's a better way to narrate it when we're talking. We have to make sure we're using proper terms when we talk.
Right. What was the word you said again, Jay?
I said it wouldn't be Christian hip hop. We're talking about faith in hip hop.
Faith in
hip hop.
Right. And that may, yeah. Mm. Faith in hip hop. Faith in hip hop.
Yeah. That's one of his intersections, brother. We have to use the right language when we're talking. The doctor, yeah. All right. The doc, we just handed it off to you, man. We're talking now this interplay between race, this interplay between class, but then also when you intersect faith,
yeah,
what does that do to this conversation, man?
Like, yeah, yeah. So I'm actually glad you asked that question because there was something I left off the table in the first section. And that is oftentimes when people hear about the Cultural Soul Project, which is, you know, the church I pastor in Portland, I talk about, you know, we do our work through the lens of the African-American experience. And oftentimes African-American and Black I use interchangeably, but I talk about African-American from the context of inner city urban America and how Blackness was functioning in urban America. But I say all that to say this. When I talk about using Blackness as a lens, the church uses Blackness as a lens, I'm really talking about a dialectic, and I use Blackness as a metaphor, right? So on the one hand, Blackness is what it is. It's a lived experience. It is a lived experience and a lived reality. And a particular cultural lens that a group of people who have had certain experiences, they look at the world. But I also use Blackness as a metaphor for all folks who have been shaped by life on the margins. And the reason why I can do that, and that's not just an intellectual play or some word games. I can do that because I think the best of the Black tradition, when you think about the civil rights movement and what King was about in particular, we have always used our struggle at the highest point to connect it with justice for everybody. That's why King said injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And I think that one of the high moments of the prophetic Black movement, specifically within the civil rights, was not just saying we're doing civil rights for Black folks. Now, that was centered, and we were definitely using our experiences for civil rights and going after that. But it was also about how do we look at justice for everybody. So I did want to bring that in when you talk about race and then, of course, faith and et cetera. So when you talk about poverty and those kind of things in hip hop, it's easy for me to make the connection because looking at hip hop through the lens of the Black experience or the African-American experience. And then I'm saying Blackness is a metaphor and it's a dialectic where I'm saying Blackness is also anyone who has been shaped by life on the margins. it's an easy pivot to talk about poverty. It's an easy pivot to talk about class. It's an easy pivot to talk about people who have been relegated to the margins because of lack of opportunity and resources, right? So hip hop for me, I started, you know, kind of through that lens. But also, the you can't talk about hip hop in poverty or hip hop in class without talking about the commercialization of hip hop and how certain people profit and how certain narratives profit over others. And so yes, what ends up happening is you got this industry that totally takes the struggles and the challenges of inner city urban living, unfortunately, that can be attached to, you know, poverty or low income or lack of resources, I would like to say. Then they offer you kind of an identity or a narrative to perpetuate, even if it's not authentic to your story. Yeah. And then those folks who are vulnerable and who have lack of resources, it's in their mind an easy out for out of their circumstance of poverty or lack of resources to be something that they're not. So you can perpetuate this image being an individual who have been marginalized and has lack of resources by perpetuating this commercialized version or commercialized narrative of hip hop that is not even true to your story. And I think that's one area where I think hip hop, rap music in particular, gets hijacked. And so, yeah, I'm always putting these things together, brothers, as I'm thinking about the work.
Yeah. I mean, I know that there may be a few MCs, faith MCs, to thinking that particular way when they come to the microphone. You know what I mean? It's not like that is a normal effort in my work to think through how am I moving the culture in a faith way towards you know, there's another narrative out here. Don't just listen to the one that I'm trying to combat what's happening. So what would you say is needed, or I don't know if it's like the right word, what would you say would impact the culture of, you know, faith MCs, the culture overall, to bring that out in the art form, like artistically? Because we thought about, like, let's grab some MCs, disciple them, walk with them in a more holistic, artistic way. Because if cats are only being discipled, taught in one particular way, you know, then they're going to maintain a particular style, a particular cultural narrative through their rhyme, right? And theological perspective as well. And then they maybe even suppressing what they really feel. And it's not until cats are either in their 30s as MCs, they realize, man, Joe, it's hard out here for a pimp. I need to rhyme about that right there. That's a mess. Versus, yeah, Jesus, go on, bring you home, Jesus, go on. You know, and in that particular dynamic, something has happened. I'm like, let's catch you at the beginning. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So I may approach this question, Brother Phil, maybe differently than you all as hosts. And this is just because of my experience and how I approach hip hop. So I believe, and this is my perspective, and it's subjective, but I think it has some relevance. To me, when you look at the core of hip hop, specifically rhyming, before you even get into content, you got to have some skills, right? Hip hop is a skill for rhyming. It is a skill-based art form, right? And so I try to tell people, I don't care if you're talking about trapping, I don't care if you're talking about God. I don't care if you're talking about community, empowerment, and development. If you are bringing it into the art form of hip hop, i.e. rap music, and you don't have skills, it's going to limit, I believe, who your music can touch. Now, certain people would say, nah, Doc, you're wrong, because there's all these trap music and these guys, they ain't rapping about nothing. They can't rap. I disagree. Now, don't vote me off the island, y'all.
I'm trying to see where you're going.
Go
ahead.
Stay with me. I actually think Future is a good rapper. Now, y'all may disagree with me because you're probably thinking about his content. I think his content is problematic. I got that. But I think if you look at it in the space of what trap music is Future's a beast. I mean, there's a reason why Future is, you know, I'm using Future as a metaphor for certain artists who are popular.
That's Ruckus boy. That's why he's smiling. That's my boy.
Now listen, I'm talking to pastors and I'm talking to brothers of faith. I'm just being honest. I'm having an intellectual conversation on the art form.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Right. You can have an amazing art form. Revolutionary art form doesn't mean that it's revolutionary content, right? And sometimes people conflate those. You can have a revolutionary art form, but not have revolutionary content.
Right.
I'm saying as an art form, if you start breaking rap down in different categories and say there is an art form to, trap music and trap rappers, I'm saying that whatever that is, Future has figured that out, right? His cadence is right. Like, you don't even right. So I would say to any
so much MC, that all other trap rappers have tried to sound like him.
Try to sound like him. Exactly. And here's another thing. I can listen to trap music. You can give me some trap music. And we're not talking about content. We're talking about cadence, flow, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I know the difference between good trap music and bad trap music. I can listen. It doesn't all sound the same to me. Now, the beats and everything, you know, the Sonic and the 808s, it kind of has a sound, but I'm talking about lyric, like cadence of rap. There's a difference to me. And I can listen to some trap music and go, yo, this dude is a beast. And like, I'm like, nah, this dude ain't got it. So I say all that to any MC. If you are a MC whose primary content is about faith, or an MC whose primary content is about whatever, I would probably tell people the first thing that you need to have is you need to have bars. You need to be able to spit. And I think if you can do that aesthetic practice and you're able to spit, I think it opens up the possibilities for folks to listen to what you have to say. You know what I mean? And so that's what I would say, Brother Phil. So it's not you're getting to your 30s and now your content is trying to change. Because there's dudes who I know that started off at 18 and 19 rapping about a particular experience. Then their life changed. In their 30s, they're rhyming about something different. But I'm like, okay, that's great. Stay with me, y'all. Don't vote me off the island. That's all great. But if you was a whack rapper and you're 18 and you ain't never got your weight up, you know what I'm saying? And you still a whack rapper in your 30s, the content, you're going to be judged differently, man, even if you're saying some positive stuff about your content.
I got you.
That's all I'm saying.
It's always, you know, I believe, like you say, it's always about like the skill you bring to the table in some regards, right? Though, but I'm just saying there is some observation of some kind of like, you know, different artists of faith, they're rhyming, but they totally different. They had skills. And they was rhyming something totally different over here that maybe over here we was wanting this depth. But something happened in between that time and now they up here, which is great. I mean, they're rhyming some depth. And they got skills. I'm just saying I would have desired that same maturity. And I don't know what happened in between that time, right? But it seems like a perpetual cycle. I hope it's not a fad thing, though. Like Muggs, like Lecrae go off on Anomaly, and now everybody's like, oh, that's the way we gotta go, and we gotta be in that. That's kind of what I'm saying. Like whatever he went through to come up with to say, I gotta be rhyming about this. I've been dogged out by these cats, and I gotta say, no, this is where I really feel. And all I'm saying is that there, you know, this the desire of folks being an artist who's seen the movement of the culture, because hip hop is who you are,
yeah,
what you do. And able to say, I need to speak this into the culture. Yeah, we got police issues going back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I got some skills. Let me rhyme about that. Versus, I see this going back and forth. Let me pop a perk. We got to pop a perk. No, like.
Yeah, I get it. Right. So let me jump into that. So I hear two things. One is, if the mainstream has created a lane for MCs to make profit, right? And cats are coming into the game and they're lacking resources, it's an easy pivot to jump on whatever the mainstream is giving you so you can get, you know, you can get your money, right? That's number one. And so some certain cats are just saying we popping perks, you know, we dropping Molly, we doing all this because it seems like that's what's selling, right? So you got to decipher that. Then you got other cats who maybe that's actually what they're doing. Maybe they are actually just popping perks, right? You know what I mean? And maybe they are dropping a lot of Molly and they doing Xanax, et cetera. So they're rapping about that. I would say this, and some people in your audience may not be a fan of this artist. I'm just dropping artists to as a way to make larger points. So to me, Jay-Z has the most perfect bookend albums in the history of hip hop. Reasonable Doubt and 444. Reasonable Doubt and 444. And
they show maturity.
It shows maturity, right? Right. Shows that maturation. But oftentimes to get from Reasonable Doubt, which are, you know, tales about him drug dealing hustling to really, you know, talking about how, you know, the story of OJ on 444 of what he should have bought instead of, you know, the crass material things that made no sense. Oftentimes to get that level of maturation, people need to have different experiences, right? And so even though I'm critical of problematic content, I'm also mindful of what are the systems and the structures that are creating the reality that folks are living in that's making them share that particular type of content. And so I feel like it's a hard ask, or at least a little bit of intellectually disingenuous, to ask a person to give you different content, but their circumstances and their reality doesn't give them the experience for their content to evolve in certain ways. And so, like I said, I slice this in so many different ways. Yeah. So I would say change the institutions and the structures that commodify a particular image that people perpetuate and buy into because they think that's how they can make money, and change the system and the structures to give Black folks in the hood different experiences and different circumstances so they can talk about different things, Brother Phil, you know. But if you are some cat that's older and you ain't dropping, you talking about popping perks and you talking about dropping Molly and that's just not your experience, and you thinking that's what it's going to be to get money, man, that's not authentic. That ain't hip hop. And I don't accept that, you know.
And I appreciate that, because I agree, man, that like it is like, I mean, I think that's what it is with me, you know. Now, I've been an MC for a minute and I know my content changed over the years, right? Like, but it was about maturation. You know what I mean? It was about what I was experiencing, not only in my general life, but also in my ministry as I was getting old. And so to expect people to have that kind of, I guess, to be ready and prepared to have the depth of knowledge that they'll have as a 40-year-old MC and a 25-year-old MC, I think is also, you know, it's almost idiotic, but yeah, it's also just not genuine.
Absolutely.
But I'm going to say 100%, I'm never, ever, ever going to be a fan, just like you, of lying.
That's right.
If you're not being 100, that ain't hip hop.
Like, not, man.
How broke you are.
Right.
Like, we don't sell our souls. Like, that's part of who hip hop is. Now, when you do it and people call you white, don't be mad at us.
Absolutely.
That's real. Like on 8 Mile, if the brothers from World Free, whatever they was, who was dissing us, if they just would have said, I went to school in the suburb, my mom was at Creole, I'm playing video game.
Him wouldn't have had nothing to say. But no, he got you because, you know, but Claire, his real name is Claire.
Right, Claire, right.
Both parents, you know what I'm saying?
And I know something about you.
Hey, let me just say this. I know we're closing on time, and I'll try to make this really quick. You know, Andre 3000 is one of my favorite rappers of all time. And, and when he dropped that, you know, his Flute album, you know, a month or two ago, he was getting interviewed, and Andre really just, he was talking about why he doesn't want to rap anymore. And he was like, he doesn't have too much to say. And he was like, what do people want to hear me talk about? Me getting a colonoscopy, you know? And, you know, that's literally what he said. And you know what? I may have been one of the only people that was like, yeah, talk about the importance of getting a colonoscopy, but do it in an artistic way where like Black men can focus on health in ways that maybe they don't. I think there are so many things you can talk about and that hip hop can evolve with the artist. So anyway, I think hip hop can evolve. Jay-Z proved it on 444. And if you're creative enough, you got bars, you got style, you got the aesthetic practice, you can make anything work within hip hop and the content.
Bro, We got to drop. Mic drop.
Okay.
Mic drop. He right. Yo, this is called, we're going to keep coming at. We're coming back. We're going to talk about the block. I love it. They put in Andre 3000 on this thing. We'll be right back. Searching the block right here on SiriusXM Channel 1. See y'all in a second.
Feel my pain. It's so deep. That make it hard to sleep. You see God. Tell him it's crazy in these streets. Tell him it's crazy.
Back, man. We back. You on the right channel. That's right. Church on the Block. Real talk about hip-hop, the church in the streets, man. We are here, man, having a great discussion with Dr. Glenn. And I hope that you're seeing, maybe you never saw the intellectual realities of hip-hop and the depths of it, and someone explaining the cultural dynamics of hip-hop and its impact, man. So right now we're talking about the streets, real talk about hip-hop, church, and the streets. And the streets are all about being real, you know, being relevant, being respectful. The streets gotta have that realness there, and you know, straight no chaser, you know, and that's why I get frustrated with MCs who are faith, who tiptoe about being that real. I watched something, I don't know necessarily know how to where to find it. Came up on Instagram, but it was Bizzle doing something, and there's some other rappers that were there. They were like well-known artists, and they heard him. He was rhyming about real stuff, and he, you know, said a few curse words in it, but he was bringing some. I was like, I ain't never heard Bizzle do this. Like, wow. And he said, if I rap about this, you want me to do this and rap about this? He was like bringing it out, but like some cats who may come from a real background, I don't know if they jump ship and think that they can't rhyme about that real background. And it don't always have to come from a real background. You just got to be real. So artists of faith, man, sometimes they just, they want to separate their life from God or something, or the real issues that are going on there. Or maybe they just don't know. Maybe they ain't read a newspaper. Maybe they don't even know that what's happening politically in this crazy situation that even happening around us now with different people winning the nomination for certain things. You know, in the context of that, but I just don't know how, you know, because you got other cats, they gonna come out with the streets, they gonna speak to the streets on fun stuff.
Boom, get out the way, we get out,
yeah. And they're gonna come with some relevant stuff to the streets, but we just seem to be intimidated by that. What do you say, Dr. Moore?
You know, so when I think about hip hop, everybody, I'm assuming your listeners understand the four corners of hip hop, or we talk about rap, graffiti, DJing, and break dancing, whatnot. But there's this unofficial fifth element of hip hop, and that's knowledge itself. Now, I think maybe KRS-One or someone came up with the knowledge itself. And we talk a lot about hip hop and authenticity. I think authenticity and knowledge itself are intertwined in the sense that I think we as hip hop folks need to pay more attention to knowledge itself. And I created this theoretical framework. I'm a theorist, trained theorist, and I always try to theorize and come up with frameworks to understand and respond to complex cultural phenomena. And I want to share a couple just things from this knowledge itself, right? That I think we artists and people who are a part of hip hop. So this knowledge itself is always this existential question. And I started off earlier today talking about in search of meaning, being a purpose, right? So that's knowledge itself, this existential question of being in search of meaning, being a purpose. But the question, here are a few questions I want folks to think about. MCs, people who are part of hip hop. Who am I and who do I seek to become? Who am I and who do I seek to become? Another question is, why am I here? Whatever here is to you and how you interpret that, but why am I here? But here's the other part. What am I supposed to do why I'm here? And then when you look at your circumstances, particularly the challenges that you may disproportionately be confronting, ask that existential question of why is this happening to me? Right? Why is this happening to me? And here's the profound one. How will I be judged by how I respond to my predicament? Right? So that kind of gets into the faith, that gets into the stuff on the ground. But I don't know if people are doing that knowledge of self, that existential work through hip hop. Because when you do that, you start asking yourself all sorts of questions And then that should manifest and materialize into your art. And then that's where it starts to get more complicated, and it can start to be more real, and it can start to be authentic. So how do I respond? I respond to the fifth element of hip hop, knowledge of self and asking yourself existential questions. And then I talked about it earlier. How am I forming and negotiating my identity within these various contexts of social, structural, and psychological marginalization? So how do I respond? That's my response.
Knowledge of self keeps yourself in line.
Mm-hmm.
By I Am Oscar Rod. That was a great line in that spot.
Yeah.
That level of work, it ain't fun though, man. That's what I'm saying. That's not fun. Right. Why want to do that? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Right. But you want to do it because you love hip hop, right? And you're actually connecting to the historical origins of the art form, right? If you really love hip hop, right? You really love the art. You really love the culture. You really love the people. You got to do that work, man. And I think it's part and parcel of it. And I think the people who aren't doing that work, they're cheating the art form. They're cheating it, right? They're cheating it. And when you cheat the art form, your stuff becomes formulaic, right? And it's not going to last long. And if you look at the best of hip hop, the best songs, the best art that was produced, you can play that anytime and it's going to be relevant because it was speaking to a reality. It was speaking to this existential reality that people were working with. So that's why, man, I love hip hop. I'm a fan of hip hop. I'm part of hip hop. I am hip hop. I live hip hop. But when I look at some of the best stuff of hip hop, I can go back to certain albums, certain songs. It doesn't matter when they were. I can listen to Midnight Marauders by Tribe Called Quest anytime.
Right.
It's some of the most beautiful stuff ever created. No doubt. Right. It's hard, but you know, anything that's worth living for, that's worth fighting for, that's worth, you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's hard work. So don't cheat yourself. Don't cheat the work, because it has the capacity to help you not only evolve, but there's some transformative aspects. If you're looking at the prophetic and the progressive forms, that I think could really help our society become better.
Yeah.
You, I think this is an important conversation too, when we think about the faith institution that you chose to be a part of establishing, with the Cultural Soul Project, because I think at the center of it is this conversation about whether or not the conversation is just this religious conversation about like religious, preservation. Do I just want to preserve myself for some otherworldly existence outside of what I deal with now? You know, so I deal with this poverty, I deal with this racism, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But then there's some place far away where I'll existentially not have to deal with it anymore.
Yeah.
I love that, like, you literally say on there, like, if the religious institution I'm connected to is not addressing the issues that I'm facing in this body, so not just my soul.
That's right.
But the encasing in which the soul rests, then it's not really, you know, a faith institution. It's not holistically taking care of my needs.
Right.
And so when I think about that with you, you know, contrasting or even connecting it to hip hop, I'm starting to ask myself this question. Basically, you're moving us from this, like, I want to use my religious connection or my faith connection as something that keeps me safe and preserves me, into something that's actually a tool of eradicating the issues that I see around me in the systems.
Yes.
And so then the question becomes, if I'm talking about eradicating and challenging and confronting things, then I also got to confront the institutions that are supposed to be training us or working with us to do that.
Yes.
So now, as we talk about the streets, hip hop, and the church, like all intertwined, it now starts to make sense how you could lie at the intersections of those things, right? Because what
Absolutely.
I'm talking about is faith, you know what I mean? Racism, hip hop, you know, injustice. Like, how are you merging those things? But now the more you talk, the more people can see that if you don't have all those merged, then you don't even have a real true faith focus, because you can't do the work of knowledge itself that you're talking about.
Right. And Pastor Jay, I would, and for the listeners out there, you have to do that stuff within the context of propheticism. You have to do that work within the context of being prophetic. And one of the things we talk about at our church is to be prophetic means to respond to your predicament or contemporary moment in terms of what it can and should be, in terms of what it can and should be, and not allowing those present circumstances to dictate or inform your responses to it. And so you have to look at this and look at your situation in terms of the possibilities of what you want it to be. And that, to me, so aligns not just with hip hop, the progressive forms of hip hop, but to me, it's about the church. And that's why one of the core element of our church, we have a lot of core elements, but it's the prophetic gospel of Christ. How are you trying to respond to your conditions and your predicament in terms of what it can and should be? Speaking life, speaking hope, speaking love, speaking possibilities. And think about Brother Phil and Pastor Jay and DJ Ruckus if artists did that in their content. It's okay. I'm borrowing this from, I heard Al Sharpton say this a long time ago. He goes, everybody in hip hop talks about, I'm just keeping it real. I'm just holding up a mirror. And he was like, a mirror is not only trying to give you your reflection, but it's also trying to tell you what you see so you can correct certain things as well and make it more presentable and make it better. And so that's the prophetic piece to say what it has the possibility to be, and how can we speak about that and speak life into our art and into our work.
Yeah, you know, Frank Thomas is dope. This is good. Frank Thomas, in his book, Preaching Dangerous Sermons, man, he talks about moral imagination. And I teach a class, and Jay has as well, at Stateville Prison. And one of the brothers, I'm like, I tell these guys all the time, look, I should be sitting, and y'all should be teaching. What the heck am I doing up here? Y'all,
that's right.
I mean, why is it North Park hiring y'all? The thing is, the brother just said, we, in this critical conversation we had about change and shift and culture, he talked about folks don't have that just another imagination. He didn't say moral imagination. He's had another phrase of it. But I say that because if we are, you know, looking at the streets and as MCs and looking at streets as preachers, there should be a moral imagination of what cats are missing and skipping. We got cats rhyming. They may be rhyming as a quote unquote reporter. They talking about the girl and the chick and the beat is hot and everything's cold. And there may be some truth in that spot they spit about the street. That's true. Get your ops, come back, blah, blah, blah. But yet there's not a moral imagination of what change can really look like, right? Of what health can really look like, what life can really look like. So that area of cats rhyming, because to me, oftentimes what it looks like is the four spiritual laws, right? And it goes into that shaping of what the call to gospel to Christ would look like. And though there's lots of room for that space, but the first cat listening to you is not going to be what they're going to absorb towards a change from the stuff on the street. They're going to know, you're going to save my life what I'm going through. I mean, I think the fact of being not being incarnational as artists in that space, you know, cause those challenges.
Yeah, no. So that's great. Dr. Glenn, I just want to ask you real quick.
Yeah.
Can you tell people how to get connected to you, man? Where can they find you on social media, websites, anything like that before Phil drops his bars? Well, let folks know how to catch up.
Oh, right on. First of all, thank you all for having me. Everyone, check it out. You can find my church at theculturalsoulproject.com. Theculturalsoulproject.com. You can check us out on Instagram at The Cultural Soul Project, and you can go to our YouTube page and watch some of our videos. And yes, the YouTube page is The Cultural Soul Project. So The Cultural Soul Project for everything, theculturalsoulproject.com. Let us know what's up.
That's what's up. That's what's up. Appreciate you joining us, man. All right, Phil, it's on you, bro.
Yo, man, there was a dude, wealthy cat, business dude, looking for a limousine driver. And he was like, man, I need to get somebody who can drive these cars, take me around where I got to go. So he's interviewing people, right? Interviews one person, and he says, man, we drive on a cliff. We drive on a tight road. How close can you get me to the edge? Dude was like, nah, I'll get you like, man, a foot from the edge, yo. Like, oh, okay, thank you. Gets another driver, interviews a person about their background. He said, man, if we're close to the edge, we're on a curve, we're going on a big mountain. And when there's limousine, how close can you get me to the edge? He said, man, I'll get you an inch from the edge. You know, I get you an inch from the edge. He's like, okay, thank you. Finally interviewed the last person, and he was like, man, if I'm driving, says the same thing, you know, how close can you get me to the edge? He said, I ain't getting you close to the edge at all. I'm getting you as far away from the edge as possible so you can be as safe as possible. He said, you higher. Other drivers had it twisted. They thought, the closer I get to the edge, the more dynamic you think I am as a driver. This brother said, no, I got to get home safe. You got to get home safe, right? In our walk with the Lord, oftentimes, man, it is, or the non-walk with the Lord, is that challenge of how close to the edge are you going to live? How close to the edge are you away from God? God says, no, come and draw close to me. Draw close to me. Draw nigh unto me. I'll keep you away from the edge, and I will show you life and life more abundantly. Yo, this is Pastor Phil, Church on the Block, Pastor Jay, DJ Ruckus, Dr. Glenn. We'll be back at you next week, 9 a.m., Holy Culture Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 140. Peace. We out.
Thank you for listening to Church on the Block, real talk about hip-hop, the church, and the streets. We're back here, same time, same day, next week. Come with us.
Tell them it's crazy in these streets. Tell them it's crazy in these streets. Tell them it's crazy.